cliffcentral.com.
So Gavin Sharples is a motivational speaker and a humorist. He's delivered messages of change, innovation, and creativity. And together with the doctrine of consistent, persistent, positive action, which he calls CPPA, he has over 30 years of sales experience and as a result achieving sales keynote and workshops. Now, he's very, very different to anyone else. Sia saw him in action the other day, and you said you loved it. You thought he was brilliant.
Oh, yeah. We were at the My Future, My Career breakfast launch.
Uh-huh.
And everyone is very uppity and has, you know, straight backs, and we're very refined and dignified. And Gavin just stepped onto stage
and starts tearing it all apart.
Oh, but it was so fun. Everyone just like didn't take themselves so seriously, but his message as well was so befitting to the morning and to anyone really, I think, overall.
Well, I don't know if I've met Gavin or not before. I can't, you know, I don't know whether I've been... I don't even know where I was yesterday. Have we met before, Gavin? It's nice to see you, man. Have we met?
I don't think so, no. But
No. Okay, good, because then I don't have to feel bad if we had met before and I'd forgotten.
Thanks for the donuts.
It's nice to see
you. I know, we're already stuffing our faces this morning.
He brought us a box
morning.
Of donuts, so you know this how to win over these peasants.
Old guests should go into this. So should we get like interview etiquette now?
Nice to see you, man.
Thank you.
So Sia was telling me how on fire you were the other day.
Yeah, thanks. It was a nice little cause, and I thought I'd just go in and, as usual, just mess up the whole stuffy corporate. yes, sir. No, sir. Mr. Yeah. Chairman. Mr. Whatever. So,
see, Gavin, I'm very cynical about motivational speakers generally.
Yeah, me too. That's why when you called me that, I was going to throw something at you, but you were in the studio and I was outside.
But isn't that what you? I mean, that's what you have to say you are, because it's a job description. It's not really descriptive of you.
That's exactly what you got to do. People don't understand the speaking industry, so what they do is they have
to tell people I'm a broadcaster, and then they think of me as some minimum wage on at midnight station announcer. You know
which
what I mean?
Which is close, because let's face it, you're on in the dark in the morning.
Yeah, well, in winter, it's like, yeah, I feel that way sometimes, trust me. So, you know, I know what you mean. But motivational speakers tend to be these sugary, sweet people who are telling you stuff if you haven't figured it out for yourself, you deserve to fail. Really?
That's true. That's why it's just a word which people use to encapsulate a person who stands on stage and makes you feel better about yourself, and a lot of them do it. So that's why I prefer a humorist. I prefer just a speaker, agitator, somebody who goes in and just shakes things up. And I know a lot of people think that these motivators are supposed to always be positive and walk around, wah, wah. It's not. No, that's not me. I have my days as well.
In
fact, I go in and actually the idea is just to cuck people out and say to them, you know, get a life.
So how do you start? If you walk into a room full of, let's say, auditors or accountants or lawyers, and they're sitting there and they hate this because some management assholes decided that they're going to hire you to come and motivate the staff because they hate working there. It's a terrible toxic environment. The printer's always jamming. The meeting rooms are always booked out. Some guy took a huge shit in the company toilet and it stinks up the whole place.
What are you describing here?
I'm saying these are the things that irritate people, right?
Yeah.
And then they come in and they're like, oh, no, now we have to listen to this guy. I've got so many emails to reply to. So how do you even approach a room like that? Because you know these people, they almost want...
No, they don't want to be there.
Yeah, they want you to fail as well.
Absolutely,
you know?
Because they're seeing you and they say, well, that's why I don't speak, is because I want to see them fail. Well, the first thing I do is I just try and go in and let's try and do things they weren't expecting. So, for example, the guy sitting at the back doing the emails, I literally walk past and shut their laptops, physically shut their laptops.
Just
get their attention and say to them, hey, if you want to do your emails, you should have done it last night. I love the guys who are getting their presentations ready, you know, the guys who are supposed to be speaking after me, and they're busy doing the presentations in the thing because they think to themselves, don't worry, I've got the whole morning and there's a speaker coming, and you just shut the laptop and tell them you should have done it last night. I used to Anglo-American Anglo Gold Ashanti. I would run into their boardroom and literally jump on the boardroom table, middle of the boardroom table, and just say to them, you know what I mean, we got to change, we've got to start doing things differently. And we do ambush. I've done ambush stuff where they didn't know I was coming and I pretended to be the cleaner So it wasn't the cleaner, it was the light guy. So what we did was, they had a meeting and the CEO knew that I was coming in and he wanted to shake things up a little bit, guy from America. And so I walked in, and myself and my buddy walked in overalls.
Yeah.
And while the meeting was on, and we started moving things, so we put things on, we climbed on the middle of the boardroom table and tried to do the lights, and people, "Mr. Chairman, I beg your pardon," and trying to, and he knew about it. And everything they tried to do, so we thought, no, well, here's the work order. We've got to do it now. You're not gonna have aircon for the next. And we just played the role until eventually they said, "Can you move to the side?" So we did, and then I was behind the bar. Next second, I opened a beer. They just said, "Shh," at the back of it. And eventually, until they riled up so much, and then what we did was, we stood up and said, "Well, now we're going to talk to you about doing things differently, acting differently, and also treating people differently. Doesn't mean because I've got an overall I'm less important than you are." And nice. That was kind of the message to get across. So we've done also, I mean, BMW at Ambush Theatre, where to set me up, we basically mess people around because we're so worried about customer service. So we brought all the people in, all the dealerships, and to these fancy hotels, but we messed them around. One of my pet peeves is, I hate it when people tell me after I've parked my car I can't park there.
Yeah.
That just annoys that. Couldn't you tell me beforehand?
You get out of the car
yes.
and you're walking in and some security guard comes to you, goes, "I'm sorry, that's someone else's parking." You're like, "Well, there's no sign, and how did you expect me to know?"
So what we did, we got some guys to move their cars four times. One I moved his car four times.
And he was patient?
By the time the third one came, he didn't. So we said, "We'll clamp your tire." So we messed him out in the car park. And then when they get to registration with the tags, we try to pick the really important people, and there was no tag for them. I mean, the ego. Just, you know, I am the dealer principal of, I am the, and you look at it, and then you normally get somebody whose English is not that good as well, and proper actors, you know what I mean? And this young black kid sits there and he goes, "No, I don't," what? And he tries to, and this guy's getting, he's trying to be all politically correct again, you know? Yes, and he's trying to, and then what they do, the best thing is that they handwrite his name badge and they spell his name wrong. And then a guy goes and asks for coffee, they give him tea, they give a glass of orange juice, they give a little bit. And
right, we just, you know what would happen? I mean, you got to also be careful, because if I went to something like this and that happened to me, you told me to park four times and then you sent me coffee instead of tea and you spelt my name wrong on the badge, I would just quietly walk out. I'd quit while I'm ahead.
Oh, no, we got guys catching them leaving, because we knew it. Because obviously the...
I don't cause a scene. I'm not going to say to anybody.
But that's what people did. That was the lesson. Yeah. The lesson was, a lot of people, they talked to their buddies and they went, "Oh, we're never coming back here again." I mean, the waiters. We got the waiters on our side. So when they brought the breakfast, I mean, it was classic. I couldn't script it. This one waiter, I was watching from the side, and these sales oaks were sitting around. And there's a table of 10, but there's only place settings for 8.
Yeah.
So, of course, the one major sales dude who clearly can't afford the car, he's just a salesman, but he thinks he owns. Yeah. The alpha male goes, "Yo, Muna, we need more cutrilia, hey?" And this waiter, I didn't brief him. I just said, "We want bad service." You know what I mean? He walked past, he looked at this guy sitting in front of all these chicks, and he said to him, "No, you can share." But I laughed. The tears were pouring out my face. So we did that, and then I would stand up after messing up the mic and doing stuff, and I'd say to them, "How's the breakfast been?" I said, "By the way, have you noticed how upset you get when your coffee is cold or someone tells you to move your car? But when you don't PDI a man's million-rand motor car and he gets upset when the mats are not in, and you look at him and say to him, 'How stupid is he?' because the mats weren't in the car." I said, the little things that irritate us when it comes to customer service, when it's done to us, people hate it when you treat them the way they treat you, and they hate it. And that was our lesson for the morning. So that's the way I open up and say, right, and more new things are coming. So try and do things that shock them and get them.
This doesn't sound like motivational speaking at all. It sounds like you're messing with people's habits and patterns.
Exactly it.
Disrupting them.
That's it. And that's, some guy said, "I'm a great disruptor." I just go into companies, we try and do things differently, and saying to you, "We have found the problem and you are it."
But in some ways, the companies that would hire you are the ones who don't even need it as much as the ones who would not hire you. Do you know what I mean? Like, some of them think they've got the magic formula.
Yeah.
"Oh, we know our staff are already happy. We don't need this guy."
Meanwhile,
they're stuck.
Yeah. It's the courageous CEOs and proper leaders who actually bring me into companies, and have for the last 25 years. The guys who, Yeah, if there's a CEO who can laugh at himself, or there's a guy who's coming to change things, to really shake things up, those are the guys who actually phone me up and say, listen, we need somebody to come and tell it the way it is. Basically, what I do is I go into companies and I tell the staff what the CEO wishes he could, but he fears the labor board and the CCMA.
There we go, yeah.
So basically, I'm a straight arrow. I look at the guy and I say to him, you know what, the problem in sales is
you're just a lazy son of a bitch.
That's exactly it. I found the problem in Italy. I mean, there's one or two CEOs who don't book me again because I've gone into the company, spoken to his staff, and he sits me down. Gavin, tell me. So you've been here 2-3 weeks now. You've done. What's the problem? I said, I've got to tell you, you're the problem.
Ooh.
You are the problem.
What happens then?
Well, they take it. I said, listen, you're probably never going to book me again, but you want the truth. All I've got is the truth. And the truth is that your staff fear you.
This is almost like when Gordon Ramsay goes into those shitty restaurants, right?
You're like the Gordon Ramsay without
South
swearing.
Corporation.
That's what I do.
You go in and you tell them what's horrible about them.
Yeah.
I love that show. I've watched 2 episodes of it only, but I love both of them. Because I don't watch a lot of TV. What I liked about it is what you're saying now is that this straight shooting. It's this idea that some people can be honest about what they see. And if you're not honest with yourself in business, you're going to slide down.
But it's the reason why you've got your own station now, Shirley. It's to tell the truth. It's to tell it the way it is. So what's it, uncensored and what? And what?
I still wonder, though, because you do have – there's a lot of – dancing around the diplomacy you have to do in business, especially in South Africa.
Yeah.
You know, there are people who will tell you that they want it done a certain way. There are clients you don't want to piss off.
There's a game we play, and that's one of the ways I get people not to play the game. Because, for example, I say to them, you know, there's a Zen philosophy that it's all a game. For example, I'm sitting here now playing the game as speaker on the radio. No. You're playing the game radio host, but it's not really who we are.
No.
And that's where you go try and sit with companies and say to them, it's not really who we are. This is a game we're playing. And unfortunately, when you start taking it too seriously, the game starts playing you, and then you have to pretend, and you have to put up these walls. And so, yes, there are certain dances you do with companies, certain people. You know, there's certain things you don't do, certain you don't. But at the end of the day, you're there to push the boundaries. I'm there to look at the people and say to them, you know what? If your salespeople are not performing, I'll tell you why, because they're freaking lazy. That's it. That's it. And they're not doing the basics. And another thing, and my big thing now, is there's no leadership in this country.
Yeah.
And the biggest problem is people to make my people accountable. Speak about accountability and responsibility and taking ownership. You go, well, okay, how do you make your people accountable? How are you making them responsible? Are you holding them accountable? 80% of managers will not go into any conflict situation with a staff member because they're scared of the conflict. And what they will do is they'll make excuses and pass it on to the 20% of people
that work. It's our problem in South Africa as a whole. We all need one big therapy session where everybody shouts at each other and we get it out of our systems and then we start again.
Mm. Got it.
Mubs and I have these discussions often on the show because we'll talk about how people are just not straightforward with each other. So that if you have a problem with somebody, rather than deal with that problem, you let it stew and fester and grow and get worse and worse and worse until eventually there's an explosion and someone is either violent or it breaks out into real hostility. Instead of just having dealt with that one thing, you know, Mubs, I don't like the sound you make when you chew or whatever. See?
It's basically a marriage. Yeah, we live in the divorce capital of the world.
Mm. Of the world?
Of the world. 50% of all marriages now will end in divorce. 50%.
Is that true?
So 50%. So when you see them coming down all waving and stuff, you look at it and go, okay, they're it. Next one, you guys are doomed. That's it.
We are in the world.
Higher than America?
Per capita, yeah. I mean, it's a numbers thing, obviously.
Wow.
Do you understand? And you know what it is?
Should be called our perfect divorce. Our perfect wedding should be cancelled.
Because we don't solve problems at home. Yeah. You've got this niggling thing about somebody and you can't tell them the truth. You can't look at them and go, one thing my kids now, I mean, I brought my daughter with me today. I'm honest. That's it. I'm all I've got. So you know when someone says, love, does this make my bum look big? You go, pants can't do that. Your bum is big, love. I mean, it's just,
yes.
So as a result, they don't ask anymore.
What is it about us that we can't deal with conflict constructively? Because there are ways to do it. And why are so many people afraid of conflict? It's like even if I get into an argument with Ben, let's say Ben takes the position that the sun rises at 6:15 and I say to him, no, it's at 6 o'clock. And he and I get into an animated, passionate debate about this, which could be construed as being conflictual by some people, and it always is. Like the moment I have a point of view and I feel strongly about it, oh, you calm down. You don't need to be so aggressive. I'm not being aggressive. That's how I feel. I feel something. And if you want to be middle of the road and mediocre about everything, that's also okay. But it doesn't mean I'm in conflict with Ben because I'm arguing about the time the sun comes up. And we'll be fine afterwards. Right?
Those are the great relationships when two people can have a full go at each other and understand that we can agree to disagree, and we don't have to be disagreeable. We don't have to call names. But you see, as soon as you have a point of view and it conflicts with mine, if I don't have the self-image, if I don't have the belief in myself and I don't like myself, I need to be liked. That's why I love you mentioned Facebook. Isn't Facebook all just about being liked?
Always.
I will post stuff to be liked. That's Everybody wants to be liked. Therefore, if I have an opinion and you disagree with me, it means you might not like me. And if you raise your voice for something, I'm not liked. And being liked and loved is one of the fundamental needs of a human being. So what we do is we avoid it at all costs. Now, some people, myself, maybe you, we love conflict. I love getting in there and getting dirty and make, because you know what? Yeah. Maybe I'll learn something. Maybe I'm full of shit. Maybe I am. And somebody can look at me and bang,
care,
bang.
I don't care if you like me or not, and I'm not particularly interested in liking or loving you. It's not my thing.
That's it.
It doesn't turn me on. What turns me on is for us to get into an argument and for one of us to win.
Please rephrase. No, but you see,
for us to get into an argument and for you to win.
No.
You love winning, Gareth, and you say it all the time.
I do love to win, but Mubs, the best conversations I've ever had are the ones where I've lost an argument because you step away and you have a chance to improve. And I love that. And I've done it many times. You've heard me say, sorry, I was wrong. The greatest thing you could do. Like, I feel so good after that. I feel great when I lose an argument. I'm like, I've met someone who taught me something who's much cleverer than me. This was not a waste of time.
Yeah.
If I keep winning the arguments, waste of my time, because I would have won whether they were in the room or not. I haven't changed my position.
But that's the thing, is what you got to do. Some people love to be tested. So you've got an opinion, and what somebody comes does, and they poke at the opinion. They poke holes. They say, but what about this? Yeah. What about this? Now, some people can't take that scrutiny, and what they do is they get very defensive, and they believe you're attacking me as a person, as a human being. I'm not. You turned around and made some statement, and I will test your statement. That's all I'm doing. I'm testing to see whether you've actually got credibility, or is it just something that your mother told you, or your father, or your grandfather, or your buddy, or you got a Facebook, and now I'm looking at you saying, so you said ABC, so let's test it. Let's see if it actually works.
Is that really what you believe? In other words, when you do that to someone, you are more, you care. You care about whether or not they actually mean what they say.
That's it. See, care, do. You see somebody doing something, and if you care enough, you will do something about it. See, care, do. That's what I believe.
But why is it that we can't be able to identify that? We don't see, oh, you care about
insecurity.
Us. Insecurity.
Because you're lost in the game. You believe you are your opinions. You believe, because remember, it all comes from beliefs, and beliefs come from things that are passed down to you from your family, from your culture, from your upbringing. So the only way to change the world, you want to change this country, change our beliefs.
Yeah.
Because your beliefs create action. Your beliefs create actions. So that's it. You've got to look at a person, but to try and change a person's beliefs, the person believes my belief is who I am. I am my beliefs. But you say, but it's not. It's something that was passed down to you based on society and culture and the things that you've been. But to test them, now I want to test that belief. And they look at you and they go, but you're attacking me. Not only are you attacking me, you're attacking my father. You're attacking my grandfather. You're attacking. And I'm not. I'm just saying.
I don't even know those people.
I don't know those people. You have a belief system. I want to test it. Because basically, does it serve you? The belief system you have right now, is it serving you? Is it serving you believing that? Well, you can see it's not, because you're fat, or you're lazy, or your work is not cut out, or there's something not working in your life. People sit down on one-on-ones with me. They go, yeah, but you know this. I say, well, what do you believe? Well, I believe X, Y, and Z. I say, but why do you believe that about women? Who says a woman should cook and clean and look after you like they're your mother? Where did you get that belief system from? Because, my friend, you're sitting here bitching, whinging, and moaning about your wife. But I'm looking at the problem right now. And the problem is you have backdated belief systems, my man.
Oh.
You're an adult.
Grow up. Sometimes you're the only adult in the room.
Okay,
but
people, they get very, very angry when defensive, you do this, which is what Sia was saying. And they do it either because they're acting out of insecurity, because their beliefs, as you say, are a mess. No. A large part of this, and I get into arguments with people much less frequently now because I don't care enough. If you don't care, you can gloss over people's beliefs being full of holes. You don't have to worry. I used to care more, and I'd argue with people about religion.
Oh, yes.
Which is, it's a dead end. It's not going to bring pleasure to either side. So I would say to someone, why do you believe this? Which is a fairly legitimate question. Oh, no, well, because it's written in the book, or because my parents told me, because I was born in Afghanistan, or whatever the case may be. And if you don't stop the argument there, the discussion, it's going to call an argument. If you don't stop the conversation at that point, it's just going to invite a world of pain. Nobody's going to have fun from there on in. Because ultimately, they don't want to change that belief. It's given them what they think is comfort, meaning. It's helped them figure out who they are. And they're going to think that your entire purpose is to destroy that, which it isn't. It's merely to find out who they really are.
It's actually to make them a better person. Because you're saying to them, you're pitching up with this belief system, and I'm asking you, can you justify it? My toes curl when I go to dinner and the person says I'm a Catholic or I'm a Jew or I'm a, because I've read a few books.
Yeah.
And I look at them and I just ask the pertinent questions. So if this is your thing, then how come that? And then they look at you and they don't.
Well, it's
and
war.
Then they make some war, because war, W-A-R, we are right. You see that? So that's what they do. They dig their heels in and they think, I'm not challenging you. I'm trying to understand you.
No.
And hopefully, by shining some light.
Gavin, you don't want to do it.
Exactly.
Because I'll sit at the dinner with these people and I'll go, I don't care about you enough to have this discussion with you. I don't need to know that much about you, because all you're going to do is react
defensively. But Gaz, what's the alternative? You sit and have a pleasant conversation speaking about the rugby and the Bulls.
And the Rand.
And how it's all going to hell in a handbag. Didn't you love the whole stay away thing? That was the funniest thing. I was in Sendai.
What's this?
That big day when everyone stayed away, Zuma must go. That thing? I've never laughed so much in my life.
Yeah,
all these high-heeled, Gucci-wearing moms standing on the side of the road shouting. Oh, by the way, Zuma wasn't there, but they're in Cinderwood by the golf course shouting, Zuma must go. And somebody turned around and said, are they going to sell water on the day? Should I bring my sunscreen? It was the most. Listen, good thing is they went out. That was a cool thing. But it's a Zuma must go.
Yeah, right.
With my Perrier.
Songs were made. Okay, it was a moment.
It was too good.
Why are people. You say motivation, like a lot of people aren't ambitious, and that's okay, because not everybody wants to be the boss or the king or the president
or live on the hill in a big mansion.
Right. Some people are very happy to, they want to be comfortable.
Yeah.
They're happy to settle in a certain zone, and that's fine. Yeah. You know, society denigrates those people. It says that they're somehow not as good as the ones who excel. But my God, if we didn't have a lot of those people, society would fall apart.
Yeah.
Mike Rowe
has that program called Dirty Jobs. I'm a big Mike Rowe fan. And he talks about the honor of work, and that the guys who do the real medial and sometimes the shocking jobs are what makes the rest of our society actually tick. And there's no honor, no dignity, and no fun in any job that you do until you bring honor and dignity to the job. You bring the fun. I mean, there's no honor and dignity in being an accountant or a lawyer.
No.
Or there's no honor and dignity in being a flippant waiter unless you bring honor and dignity to that position. It's all about us and what we bring.
You are so right. You just made me think. I went to a restaurant a while ago and there was this waiter and he was so good at what he was doing. And he was so proud of what he was doing. You could see the guy, he had perfected every part of what he had to do there. He was so good at it that by the end of it, I was in awe.
Yeah.
I thought this guy, he could be anything. But you see, we rank jobs. So the toilet cleaner could never possibly be the best at anything because she's just a toilet cleaner.
You want to give yourself a favor? You want to make a difference? I saw two examples, toilet cleaner and waiter. Toilet cleaner I was at the gym the other day, and this guy was cleaning the toilets, but he wasn't cleaning the toilets. This guy was cleaning the toilet. Like, I've never checked a guy so into his job. I just whipped out $100. I tapped him on the shoulder. I said, my buddy, you rock. You're the best flipping cleaner I've checked. See this guy's face.
He doesn't expect it,
not at all. The waiter example. Here's the good thing. When you see waiters like you've just spoken to, you want to tip them. You want to, because remember, a tip is a token in, what's it, in something to service. I'll get the acronym now. But do you know what I've had on three occasions now? Waiters returning the money because it's not enough. I love this. This is the new thing. They, on three occasions, they gave the tip back to him. So they expect 10%. So your bill comes to $400-$500. They expect 50, 60 bucks. Me, I slap on $20 and I send it. Mm-hmm. They bring it back. And they, you know, when they do the card thing, they put the only the amount in and they make you turn. You say, but you haven't the tip. Don't want it. It's not 10%.
Oh.
Not once, not twice. By the third time, and you know, you go to the owner of the restaurant and you say, this human being is actually throwing the money back in my, and then of course you go on Facebook.
What's that all about?
You post it on Facebook and everyone, I was a waitress once and you must all that and you must. I said, no, my buddy, you're getting it. If the person, we are paying to be served anyway because it's in the cost of the meal,
yeah.
Believe me. I don't want to get involved in the
tip
relationship.
The tip is not the salary.
That's it. And I don't want to get involved in the relationship between him. I'm not paying the person there. I'm not part of the... You have to make sure that you tip what you feel is appropriate. So what I did, I mean, the one time the guy gave me the $20 back. So I took the $20. I spoke to the guys. I then walked outside, went to the car guard. I said to him, by the way, your lucky day. I was going to tip that woman in there, but yeah, you can have... The guy says, I said, she returned the $20 to me. So... The guy took the money because it just seems to be now a right of people who, and then you go to the other waiters and they turn around and they go, how could they do that? You say, well, somehow there's a belief system that you have to do X, Y, and Z. And that's just,
and the worst thing you can do is impose what your belief system is, you have to do X, Y, and Z on others and imagine that it's going to work.
Yeah.
I mean, that's when you end up with politicians who get out of control or you end up with bosses who are hated by their staff because they're trying to apply their world belief system to everyone around them. They do it to their wives, they do it to their husbands, they do it to their children. It's such an ugly human trait, right? We think we figured it all out, so then we start imposing it on everyone else because now we're bored.
That's it. And also that's when that belief system that other people are less than you. Hmm. I mean, I think only if you've stood guard at the gate and you've worked that job, do you know how important that job is? That's why when I drive into a complex, if there's a guard, I'm probably the most friendliest team because I've done that. I've actually stood gate guard.
You did?
I stood gate guard when I was starting out.
Well, we were talking about really awful jobs that we all did in the beginning earlier. And I imagine there's something about that that's quite necessary. Nobody starts in a job they love. Nobody. Yeah.
And it's a great...
But you hear Oprah Winfrey and motivational speakers telling people you could be anything you want to be.
Oh, that's nonsense.
Oh, you can. Yeah, you can.
I could never be a jockey. Okay, I'm six foot one and tons of fun. There is no way that I can be a jockey. Okay, it's not going to happen. You, Gareth, are never going to be a jockey. But try this, whatever you want.
Of course, but is this why millennials are so unhappy about so many things about the work system? But they are unhappy about it. You ask them, and they'll tell you, like, this is not how I imagined it would be. This is not the dream I was sold by television, by the Kardashians.
Well, it seems you're right.
By my mom. No, my mom and dad told me I was so gifted and so talented and I got trophies and participation awards even if I came 20th. How come I'm not the CEO of my own entrepreneurial business and I'm 25? What the hell have I done wrong?
What you've done wrong is you've been living in this false world the whole time. I mean, you've seen it. I mean, you were on the show. What are these shows? Sorry, I don't watch them as well. You know, when people sing and you judge them.
Oh, Idols.
What are those?
Yeah.
You've seen the guys come up and their mom told them for their whole life that they were talented and they could sing. And then they stand up and they screech and you have to look at them. Someone's going to look at them and
screech.
Go, no, you've got no talent, my friend. And that's the thing. We seem to, the sheltered, that's the balance. Do we shelter our children and shelter them from what we had, we went through, and then make them live differently? Or do they have to have some kind of a hardships? That's why I like guys like David Beckham, who turned around and says his son needs money, so he got him a job to go and work. I mean, he went and okay, he knew somebody, but that guy waits tables. I don't know what one of the kids' names is, but he waits tables. And I mean, he doesn't have to, he's David Beckham's son. But he said to him, you've got to go and start. And yes, I got the contacts, but you will start in the kitchen and you will wait and you will do stuff. There's something to the grind that if you haven't done the grind, you become this entitled to.
Amanda was telling me earlier. Amanda's, how old are you now, Amanda? 20, right?
20, yeah.
Okay, so Amanda was telling me that she's got a bunch of friends who are in matric with her.
Yeah.
Yes.
And they all, are you caught up in your cables?
Caught up
there?
In my cables.
Oh, okay. Sure.
So Amanda tells me that a bunch of her school friends, it's now 2 years since matric, have been sitting around for 2 years. And their parents are still paying for them to go out every weekend and they sit and smoke hubbly all week, and then they complain that they can't get jobs, and they don't even have a CV, for example. And what would you say to those kids?
Good luck with that, hey? Good luck with that.
Because here's Amanda. She's doing this internship with us at the moment. And it's not easy to get jobs. Let's be honest about it. It's not the greatest environment at the moment for someone who hasn't got a degree or someone who hasn't got a huge amount of experience. And I've got friends who are not unintelligent people who've said to me, they go into the job market, they say to these guys, you don't have experience, so I can't hire you. But the only way they can get experience is if they get a job.
Yeah.
Right? Is that right, Amanda?
Yes, no, that's true.
Yeah. So what do you say to that, Gavin?
Well, that's one thing. It's not new. I know I used to hit the bricks 20, 30 years ago to try and find a job, and they said exactly the same thing to me. My dad, when he started many years ago, they said exactly the same thing to them. Just to let you know, there are jobs out there. It depends on what you're prepared to do and not to do. So whiteys really annoy me. You know these white guys who turn around and they say there's no jobs to get. And I say, you know what? I know a lot of CEOs. I know a lot of people. They're looking for good people. But you walk in there and you expect to start at a certain level. And I will not accept this. And I will not accept that. And there are jobs. Go in there. Have a great attitude. Tell people you'll work for nothing. Let's face it, if you're sitting at home doing nothing now, go to somebody and say, I will work for you for nothing for 3 months, and you check me out. And after 3 months, if I don't make the grade, because what else are you going to do? You're going to sit at home. Try something. Start something. Do something. And it's the attitude that you walk in as well. People in South Africa, especially corporations, are looking for good people. But we all want good people because of the brain drain, people leaving. Companies are looking for good people. If you are good at what you do, and I mean really good at what you do, and you're prepared to take a step or two backwards, you will find something. You definitely will. I mean, there are exceptions. Obviously, some guys have tried, and there's certain industries that are niche. I get that. But generally, if you go out and you really want to do something, you will find work to do because you've just got to take two or three steps backwards. And I'm talking about maybe sometimes four or five steps backwards, but there is work out there. I can't tell you. Look at the newspapers. They're full of looking for this, looking for this, looking for this, looking for this. And I'm saying, well, go and try. Apply. Get out there and put your CV out. People come to me, I'm so unhappy in my job. I'm really unhappy. I say, well, first of all, you've announced and you've declared. When you say the words, I am unhappy, stop talking. Because what you're doing is whatever comes after that, you are blaming for your unhappiness. Some people, I'm unhappy with my marriage. I'm really unhappy with my, I'm unhappy with my husband. I really am. I say, come here. Bring your marriage certificate. No. Where does it say he will make you happy?
Oh, damn.
It doesn't. Come here. Yeah. Where does it say she will make you happy? It doesn't. Yeah. Because you are responsible for your own happiness. So get off your backside, and the person turns around and says they can't do this. They can't. I say, well, show me what you've tried. And as Tony Robbins once said, he says, people say to him, I've tried a million things. He says, well, show me. I've tried 1,000 things. Well, show me the 1,000. Okay, I've tried 100 things. Well, show me the 100 things. And what did they get stuck on? They show me the 3 things that he tries and hasn't worked. And I say, well, because people exaggerate. I've tried everything. You know, people say, I will do anything to lose weight. I say, okay, come sleep with me. Pardon? You said anything, so come and I can't. But you just said the word anything. You said anything.
But isn't this also because people don't honor the fact that words matter? What you say manifests real things around you.
No, it doesn't.
It does.
No, it doesn't.
Words matter.
Words don't matter. They don't, because I can say what I like. It's not what I say. It's what I do.
Really?
It's what I do. It's all about action. Do you understand love is an action? So a person turns around and says, Gareth, I love you.
Yeah.
It's got nothing to do with you. It's got to do with me. And I just said, I love. I'm feeling love. Yeah. So the question is, how do I show you love? I've got to do something for you. I've got to pitch up. I've got to cook a meal. I've got to take you to dinner. I've got to give you a house, a car. I've got to treat you like a queen. I've got to give you a job. I've got to do something on a daily. I love people when I do a talk. I get wonderful ratings, 9 out of 10, 10 out of 10. And I say to them, well, thank you for that. And it's great for the next gig because people need that to play the game.
Yeah.
But the greatest thing you can do for me, send me an email a week later and saying, by the way, I went and I hugged my kids every single night for a week. And this is how I have actioned what you've spoken about. I made an extra sales call every single day. You know that one thing you spoke about? I made sure that every single day before I left, I phoned 3 more clients. And the result is X, Y, and Z. That's what I want to see. I want to see what you do. Please, your words, don't tell me you love me. Show me. Don't tell me you respect me. Show me. Don't tell me. Leave the words behind. More, there's a song you can play. It, More Than Words. I think it's by
Extreme.
More Than Words is one of my best songs because it says, you don't stop telling me how much you love me. Show me how much you love me. Just pitch up. Just be in my corner. Just sit with me. Just take the time. These are the things. It's what you do that counts. I've got a whole thing I do. I speak for an hour and a half just on the concept of it's what we do that counts. People say, yeah, but it's thoughts because thoughts create words and words create nonsense. If thoughts counted,
okay,
I would have been, because they say, yeah, you become what you think of most of the time. I said, if that was true, I would have been a woman 40 years ago.
maybe it happened to Caitlin. Now we can explain that.
So no, it's not about words. Words are things we block to stop our actions.
But for a lot of people, they get stuck in money.
Yes.
Because they're not doing what they say. They're not living an authentic life. They're not necessarily trying to improve other people's lives around them. They're not. They're consumed by the bank balance.
Yeah.
And not themselves. Even I, but if it's the bank balance, because they regard every success and failure as being a material one.
Yeah.
Those people, is there a way out of that? Are they right?
No, it doesn't. I don't vilify people who are materialistic and people who want money. Men, by the way, men generally, it's a generalization. Everything I say is generalization, there's exceptions. But men judge their success on money,
yeah,
and money turning into material stuff. That's why I say to women, if you want to know if a man really how he feels, a lot of men find it difficult to talk about how they feel, but they buy you stuff.
Yeah.
So I'll go and face the dragon every day. I'll chop off some meat, I bring it, I go, let's face it. Men are one step away from an ape. Really.
I agree with you.
We're Neanderthals. Yeah. We really are. And the only reason why we stand upright and shave and put some smelly stuff on is to get laid. I mean, apart from that, that's right. Because as soon as she walks away, you go back and you go back to your ape state.
So men
do, but all I say to people is, if you like money and you think money's going to bring you happiness, then you've got the right to find that for yourself. But here's the thing, all money is energy. And as you rightly said, if you are serving other people, if you are helping other people, if you are doing something for others, money's going to find you. The more you serve other people, the more service you render to your fellow human being,
the more money
just tells you if you're on the right track. But money's not the be-all and end-all. Because let's face it, a lot of people with money shouldn't really have it. Somebody once said, if you want to know what God thinks about money, look at the caliber of people he gave it to. And a lot of people say, yes, but money is the root of all evil. I say, no, it's not.
No.
What happens if you've got money and you build churches? What happens if you've got money and you... Well, that's not churches. Don't do that. If you've got money and you open up shelters?
Okay. Yeah, sure.
So money doesn't... but money can't buy you happiness. I say, have you ever gone to the Grand with a gold card? I love you a long time. No, money... Money is nothing but an energy that finds you if you're worthy, if you appreciate it, if you respect it. Money is your scorecard. That's all it is. And money doesn't change you. Money magnifies who you were in the first place. So if you were a poophole before you had money, when you get money, you're just a poophole with money.
Yes.
That's all it does. So yes, if you love money and you think money's going to make, then go for it, my buddy.
But I know people who imagine that they would be nicer people if they just had more cash in the bank. They won't be, right?
No, for a short, they say for about 6 months they could be nicer people, but then you go back to your default position. So yes, you get money, and for the first couple of months you've got lots of relatives you've never heard from before. They all phone you and they all bum you up, and they say, but once that's all gone down and you go back to your normal default position, and then you're just not a nice person with money. So money can't change you, it just magnifies who you are.
What is your critique then of the opposite spectrum? Because there are also people who feel that they're entitled to be dependent on somebody else. No, he must take care of me. He's the man. Well, girl, you are also an adult yourself. Why aren't you taking care of yourself?
That's it. You become it. That's a belief system.
Yeah.
The belief system is that some knight in shining armor is going to come in on a horse and sweep me off and
not an
and
idiot.
Make your life better.
And yeah, you know, the thing is, it's the pretty woman, the pretty woman. So remember, pretty woman, Julia Roberts.
Yes.
And I say, but do you understand? She was a prostitute.
Yeah.
that's what she did in the beginning.
They don't show you what she put up.
That's it. She was a working girl. Yeah. Okay. So no, if you are going to sit and wait or expect somebody else to look after you, you can do that by all means. And the question I ask is not right, it's not wrong.
Mm.
How's that working for you?
Mm.
Because I tell you what, if somebody's going to buy and pay for you and they think you're bought and paid for, trust me, it's going to come to a point where they're going to buy and pay somebody else.
Well, there's a moment when that 80-year-old billionaire has all those models on the yacht and he starts licking their faces and you wish you weren't watching it. There's always going to be that.
Something you can't unsee.
Yeah. Now, what about relationships? Because for a lot of people, you know, the money's one thing, their health is another. We'll get to that in a second. And their relationships are another defining characteristic of who they are. So for some people, they get into these toxic, bad relationships. For some people, they luck out and they end up with someone who they love and who loves them, and it just works. There's balance. Or is that just a myth?
Yeah, that's a bit of a myth. Did you find that perfect relationship? Relationships, the mistake people make with relationships is they believe that they're going to get something out of the relationship. And that's why a lot of people get married. They get married, they get into relationships because they think the other person is going to complete them.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody can complete you. And if you come into, I love asking people, and again, I'm picking on women, but it's men as well. I love women because it's just funnier. Describe your perfect man.
Oh.
And number one on the list is normally someone with a sense of humor, someone who makes me laugh.
Yeah, but then if he's going to joke about your big backside, then no, it's not so funny anymore. Right?
When the truth comes out. No, but I look at them and I say, but that's fine. Cause, oh, so you normally get this. Someone's face, that you know these women, somebody who makes me laugh. I say, well, he's got his work cut out for him. Because guess what? If you go into a relationship and your goal is to take something out, you're going to have a problem. Relationships are based on what you put in. So you cannot take anything out of a relationship that you yourself haven't first put in.
See, that's not our understanding.
Exactly. And that's why
I blame Oprah, Sia.
That's why we got such a messy relationship.
I blame the movies. The movies. And
You Complete Me is like the climax
it's
of
the
any
Jerry
romantic.
Maguire.
Yes.
And I look at you and say, why do you need completing?
Yeah.
And why do you need somebody else to complete you?
Are you going to move in?
That scene
up?
Was deleted.
The metaphor is, why move into a building they haven't finished construction on yet?
Because you'll finish my construction. That's what I'm looking for. I'm looking for somebody to come in. And all of the holes I have in my personality, I look at somebody else and I go, oh, I'm not strong. I don't like conflict. I need an alpha male. Don't you love these women? I see some of the most deadly, hottest women. And they're standing around with these tattooed thugs. You know these guys who've got muscles on their heads. You know, and
muscles on their heads.
These women are like swooning. And I'm going, and I look at the woman and I say, listen, any guy who solves his problems with his fists, one day you are going to be his problem.
No, you need to say it again.
I am on the mountain. Hold on. Let me get into my Zen position.
Catching the spirit.
Say it again.
And that's what we do. We tend to go out and look for whatever we believe our defects are, the things we know we can't do. We look to another human being and go, okay, tick the box. Okay, so that puzzle piece will fit nicely and fill my gaps. And the guy does the same thing. He looks at a woman and thinks, well, what I need is I need somebody who's nurturing and caring and but basically, you've got to be that person. I believe if you come to a relationship and you say to the person you're with, how can I help you be the best that you can be? And how can I dedicate my life to helping you be the best that you can be? And that person says to me, how can I help you be the best person? You've now got a partnership. You wake up every day and your goal is to help each other just experience and be the best that you can be. Neil Donald Walsh, he's got a wonderful phrase. He says, don't tell a person in a relationship that I love you. It's trite. It's silly. I love chocolate. I love milkshake. Mm. I love my dog. Look at the person in the relationship and say, as you wish.
As you wish.
My wish for you is your wish for you. Your wish for you is my wish for you, as you wish. So if you wish to, we get together and you wish to be in radio, how can I spend my times, my days, my coin helping you get into radio. You want to be a bodybuilder. How can I help you be the best bodybuilder you can? That's a partnership. That's a relationship. And what we do, we're constantly putting in and putting in and putting in. Now imagine being in a relationship where you wake up every day and this person just wants to put in and you just want to put in. At the end of the day, do you want to leave that relationship?
No.
Absolutely not. That's what relationships are. It's not what I can take. Companies, people go to companies and they ask, what can I take? Watch it when you interview people. I've had people sit at interviews and they sit there in the interview. So how much leave do I get a year? And how much sick leave do I get? The person hasn't even got the job and they're asking about what they get. When you go to a job interview, stop asking how much leave. And there's a... I do a lot of work with franchises. Mm. And when the franchise are bringing the franchisee in to... The way that the one company does it, we won't mention their name, they will not sell a franchise to a person who asks this question on site. The person who sits and goes, so where, you know, they're planning the franchise, where's my office going to be? As soon as they hear, where's my office, they know that this person is not going to be active in the place. They want to sit in their office while somebody else runs the business. It is, the one guy said, when a person asks, where's my office? He won't sell them a franchise because he knows they're not going to put in. Oh. They want to set up shop and take out. Same as a job. You sit down and in the interview, if you ask one question about, I mean, the only question you should ask is your package. But some people even go in, they know more or less the package. And all they want to do is they want to work for this company. Money is a separate thing. All I want to do is I want to be here and I want to contribute to this company. Mm. I want to grow it. I've got ideas. I've got things. Now, you approach an interview like that. That relationship is going to take a totally different turn to the person who sits back and goes, okay, so tell me about what I'm going to get. Because it's a give and take. But the more you put in, the more you're going to get it. Hold on. Hold on, people. I feel a big quote coming.
Oh, okay, all right.
Hold on. Here it is. Hold on.
Sorry, we've got to stretch first.
Hold on. As you sow, so also shall you reap.
Oh man!
I think it was Shakespeare. Wasn't that Shakespeare?
That's very good.
Oh Jesus, one of them.
Hallelujah.
We're just getting to church.
Let's talk in tongues.
What about people who are always sick? I mean, there are people who are just, they're beset with health problems. Do you think, like so many psychologists do, that a lot of what we are going through physically is what we bring to ourselves? We're attracting that.
Yeah, well, that's first thing is you've got a psychologist. These are people who are seriously in need of counseling.
You think so?
They sit around all day listening to other people's problems.
All right.
But just on that, I feel like a lot of people as well are stuck in their own story.
Yes.
Oh,
yes.
It's like this victim mentality or, oh, well, I'm just bad in relationships or, oh, no, my job just sucks. It's that story.
Yes, they're blaming other people for their state. Look, first of all, I've got to put on the record that there are some people that just have ill health. There are, some people.
Bad luck sometimes too. I mean, some people just shitty things keep happening.
No, but bad luck, a lot of people create their own bad luck. You know what I mean? Like the guys... We are the only species. It's amazing. Go into the wild. I'm not one of those. You know when they say to me, would you like to come on the game drive tomorrow morning? Yeah. I would rather have my eyes poked out with a pencil than go on a game drive. Because you know you get these macho game rangers who drive around and they go, look, stop. And you look in the bush and you can see nothing. Look, it's the left testicle of a rhino. Look, can you see it on the... I don't... What's this macho crap that you do?
You're saying in the wild?
So, in the wild, if you look at a duck, an animal like a gemsbok or whatever. Duck, no, it's actually an instruction. Watch out. If you look at this gemsbok or something, he's standing at the river and what he does is he hears something that could be danger and he looks in the bush and he goes, now his gut instinct says danger. And what he does is he starts slowly moving away from the danger. Wow. It's an instinct. People don't do this. What people do is they walk in, they go, oh, could be danger. Now, the instinct has told them, so what do? Let me go have a look.
Yeah, it's like the same reason we stop at a traffic accident.
That's
stupid people. Move away from the danger.
But they sit in their cars complaining, why aren't these people moving? And they get to the exit and they themselves stop. And you go,
they're rubbernecking.
Oh. Yeah. They're rubbernecking because also what they do is that's a little bit of excitement in their life.
Yeah.
They can now go to work and go, I saw an accident. And have you noticed they say, it must have just happened. Because the closer I get to the actual accident, the more interesting I am and the more I have a life now.
I witnessed the count. You know
yes,
the details.
You're boring. Maybe I can get myself on television.
Meanwhile, you're a boring person and you've got nothing really to say.
And that's why accidents will fascinate you so much, because it's a little bit of excitement in your life. So some people are genuinely ill. Some people use the illness as an excuse not to get up and go.
Yeah.
But there are some people who genuinely have illnesses.
Sure, of course.
You know what I mean? But we're not talking about those.
No.
We're talking about the ones who always seem to, and these are the ones who always get flu, and they always get down, and they get yuppie flu. And so these are the people who genuinely, and remember, these people are, it's copping out. It's a way, how don't I face the world today?
Yeah.
I'll be sick. How do I get attention? I'll go to the doctor, I get attention, people will then look after me and coddle me, and men, I mean, I know when I get sick, but we do. Men get bigger sick than women. I mean,
don't,
it's a fact.
No.
We get man flu. Guys, you've got man flu.
Never.
Women don't.
No, I'll tell you why.
Women get this.
No, I had this conversation with someone yesterday. I don't, and I'll tell you why, because my mother had no sympathy with us. She once sent me to go and play tennis after I'd broken my arm because she thought I was making it up. So I don't have that. I never got attention. I got the opposite. I got scolding and hatred when I was ill. She didn't want an ill, irritating child
tough
around.
Tough love. Yeah. Don't say
she'd say to me,
tough love.
Pull yourself together. Get better now, for fuck's sake. So I didn't have a chance. So I do not get man flu. And I look at these pathetic men who do, because once when they were little boys, their mommy used to hug them and say, oh, we're going to be better later.
Yeah.
Mommy's giving you a hug.
Okay, no, hang on. Wait a minute.
But it's so much nicer, guys, when your wife
hugs you. Guys, viruses and bacteria.
Let's take our clothes off and hug.
Viruses and bacteria do get into our bodies, though. Are you guys disputing that? I mean, come on.
No, I get man flu.
Some people,
I try and get man flu at least once a year.
Some people just carry on.
No, one thing about getting man flu, I've realized that as well, is that I've got man flu. I've got stuff that's so bad. I mean, I got mad flu together with gourd where I stopped breathing. But you know what? My job is to perform on stages. So what you do is you drag yourself out of bed with a headache, with a temperature, with your throat, and you get on that flight and you do the gig and you come back and you die that night and you medicate yourself and you go out the next day. Mm. You don't, because when you work for yourself, you don't have a basic salary coming in every month.
No.
And sick leave and unions and CCMAs. And you just got to get up and do the job. So that's a different, you know what I mean? When you work for yourself, that people don't see that. I wish I could work for myself. I don't have a boss. Sweetheart, that means every customer is your boss. And every customer is different, and they all have different demands. So you are lucky. You work for one boss. You know his quirks. You know what she likes, what she doesn't like. When you work for yourself, every single client is a potential boss with different quirks and likes. And you got to mold yourself, and you got to play the game, but still trying to be authentic.
Mm.
That's a nice little balance in that. And when you feel sick or down, yesterday I had the worst screaming headache I've had in, I get the blinders, like once every 2 or 3 months, I get a blind over headache. My back was in spasm. I was like, I was out. The day before I was acupuncture.
Sounds like you're possessed by demons.
That's it. But yesterday I had a gig. I had an Anglo-American gig in Randfontein, and it was a 3.5 hour MC gig, and I had to perform. So you medicate yourself up, you put your big boy pants on, and you head out the door. You do your gig, make the client happy, come home and collapse, and say to your wife, come, let's go hug.
What kind of a guy is this? I'm going to ask your daughter, what kind of a man is this to live with? What kind of a father is he? Grab that microphone next to you.
Oh,
what kind of guy is this?
She's life.
Uh-oh.
Come on, let's go. Tell me the truth.
No, he's cool. He's cool.
Is he cool?
Yeah. No, everyone always actually asks us this question. They're like, so he must be such a jewel to just live with, be around. It's like, yeah, obviously he has his moments, but he's just a normal guy.
Does he do this at home, though? Like, yeah, if you're just going through something, he has an acronym or a solution.
Tell him about my lecture face. Come, tell him the lecture face.
A three-step plan to get out of a bad breakup.
There's always, like, if you're going through something or you've done something wrong, you know it's serious when he looks at you, says your name, and sits down and looks at you, and then you know it's coming.
Uh-oh.
you're going to get the whole, this is what you've done wrong, this is how you fix it.
Accountability. Mm, yes.
Mm, yeah.
Poor girl. Just wink, wink twice if you need help.
Yeah.
Wink twice if you want us to call Child Protection Services.
No, oh, would you? So I keep my son Callan. He's like, he's very chirpy. He says, I'm going to phone Child Protection. I said, please get it. It's cheaper. I'll phone them.
Wow, Gavin. All right, listen, you've been fun to have around this morning. We've talked about a lot of stuff.
Yeah, thank you. I got an invite. I didn't know why I was coming. And I even said to your producer, why am I here? They said, I don't know. We're just going to wing it. But I thought, well, hey, let's just wing it.
You know what? Sometimes you have someone in and it's an interview where we find out all about you and all that stuff. And we might want to do that sometime. But then you just get talking with other people. And it could end up being useful. Someone who's going through one of these scenarios that you put out there now. You know, maybe you just said something that'll help somebody today.
Yeah. Well, on my side of it, I'm going to say you're one of the first guys I've actually spoken to who's actually listened. I've been on a lot of shows, and what the guy does is they're so busy getting ready for their next thing or waiting for what they're going to say next. Mm-hmm. And it's very off-putting. I mean, you've obviously been interviewed by people where they're so busy looking at their script, and as you're talking, they're not even there, and then they come back. So it's always nice to be able to talk to somebody who actually listens, who actually has an opinion.
What?
And you guys are fun. Yeah.
Sorry, we're just getting voices in our headphones.
But isn't that also part of the deal? It's like, as Sia was saying, we get so wrapped up in our own story.
Yeah,
like we start thinking that that's the movie, and all the other people are cameos in our movie.
That's right. And you know, you spoke about the whole movies and what the way and the movies portray life.
Yeah,
one of my favorite programs, only because it's got Tom Selleck in, and I just think Tom Selleck is a guy. If you know, he stands for character. He's got a whole foundation called Character Counts.
Oh yeah,
and Tom is very big on character and doing the right thing and that.
Oh really? Tom, I didn't know. I just thought. After Magnum P.I., I thought he'd been put out to pasture.
He's the dude with the moustache.
No, he is the moustache. Yeah. I mean, there's nobody who's got a moustache like Tom. He's a guy who's turned down massive roles because he made a commitment. You know, Magnum, he turned down Raiders of the Lost Ark. He turned them down because he had signed to do Magnum. And they said, well, listen, Raiders is a big thing, and there's this unknown TV thing.
With Spielberg.
With Spielberg. Yeah. Spielberg said, you can be the guy from Raiders of the Lost Ark, but he had signed with the Magnum people, and it would clash. So what he did was he went back and he said to his dad, what are you doing? His dad said to him, you know what to do. I've taught you what to do. You've got to stand by your thing. And it worked out that they both shot their first scenes in Hawaii, and Magnum couldn't shoot for a week or something because of the storms. But the Spielberg movie, so he could have done both. But he didn't. He actually turned down the Raiders, and he took Magnum, obviously, which came the big thing. Tom Selleck's now his program, Blue Bloods, mm-hmm. It's about cops.
Yes, that's right.
Now, the one thing I don't like about it, but they get the family sitting around doing a family lunch every Sunday. And I mean, the whole family's there, and everybody always gets on. And that's that idyllic.
Yeah.
And I look at people and I go, it doesn't happen. No. There's always a family member that you're embarrassed of. There's always the one you don't want to see. Always, and I'm trying to say to people, that's the idyllic, and that's what we strive for. And because it's not possible, doesn't mean we can't believe in that. So believe in that, strive for that, go for that. But at the end of the day, it's about what you bring to your family, not what you can get out.
If we take anything out of this, it's basically that. Think about what you're going to add, what you're going to take away.
That's it.
Well, it's a good way to go. I mean, if nothing else, that's a very pleasant way to spend an hour of your time talking to someone who's interesting and full of energy and does the right thing and says the right thing and also appreciates what really works. Yeah. We have a lot of people who come in here and they've got wise sayings. This is applicable. This stuff you can actually use. Thank you, man.
You're welcome. Thanks.
Good to meet you. CliffCentral.com.